Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching from the book of Romans and will be continuing today with part one of Satan and the Christian. So let's turn in our Bibles to Romans chapter 16, verse 20, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
So there in the 20th verse, Paul said, "And the God of peace will crush Satan under your feet shortly." Satan and the Christian. It's interesting to me. Here at the end of this epistle to the Roman Christians, Paul mentions Satan for the first and only time. The Christian has three forces at work against him: the flesh, the world, and the devil. Paul spent a large portion of the epistle dealing with the flesh. He wrote extensively on human depravity, original sin, and the conflict between the flesh and the spirit. He also warned of the temptation to be molded into the world's image. And now here at the very end of the letter, he mentions Satan. It got me to thinking, and I went through and sort of counted things up. 20 out of the 27 books of the New Testament reference the devil. The devil is real, for sure. There is no question about it, and the Bible is unapologetic in speaking of this evil spirit. And we need to be aware of this reality that we live with, that we, to some degree or another, encounter on a regular basis. Because the devil is real, and you can be sure that he is actively working against the advancement of God's kingdom in the world at large and in the lives of individuals. Satan is at war with you. He is at war with me. Now, as Paul tells us here, God is going to crush Satan under our feet. There's an appointed time for his judgment. That's the promise. But until then, we've got to be alert and watchful, because as we're told in another place in the New Testament, our adversary, the devil, goes about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And I believe that we're seeing an increase in his activity in these days. I personally think it's becoming more and more clear that we live in the midst of a great spiritual conflict. Think about these things with me for a moment. We see this conflict in the rise and spread of militant Islam. Not merely the rise and spread of it, but the inability of people to recognize the danger that is presented by this militant Islam. We see it in the rise of a new and aggressive atheism. So we see it there. We see it in the relentless attempts to impose the gay agenda on the culture. We see it in the vilification of Christians and Christianity. We see it in the resurgence of anti-Semitism. We see it in the revival of liberal theology within the church through such avenues as the emergent movement. So as we look out at the world scene, I think it's becoming more and more obvious that we are in a huge spiritual battle. But yet there's also the more personal side of this onslaught. The attacks upon marriages, attacks upon the family, children, the attack upon our minds, the attacks upon our bodies, heightened temptation directed at us in the areas of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. All of these things being orchestrated and manipulated by invisible forces, the apostle refers to as principalities and powers. So this is the biblical picture of reality. And of course, there are lots of people that would just completely dismiss this as utterly absurd, anti-scientific, hocus-pocus, fairy tale type of stuff. But I think if you're honest and you take, you know, just a real honest look at it, it's astounding how all of these forces, although they have certain things in common, they have also differences and things that would, you know, cause them to disagree and divide. But the common thing that they unite over is opposition to Christ and the gospel. You know, isn't it amazing that oftentimes you will find the new atheists defending Islam? And you will find the Islamic nations having no problem whatsoever in working with atheistic regimes. And you see that there's, you know, even though they have their different worldviews and their different agendas and so forth, they can come together and all agree that Christ, Christians, and the church, they are the primary problem. But here's what we've got to realize. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood. Our fight is not ultimately with Muslims or atheists or militant gays or theological liberals or Hollywood or Sacramento or Washington, D.C. Our fight is with the devil and the demonic host behind the scenes. And we cannot forget this. Because if we forget this, all of our efforts to fight will be futile. We are the only ones, think about this, we are the only ones who can fight this battle on the most important level, and that is the level of the spiritual. We're the only ones that can do that. And there are different ways that we do that, and we'll talk about that for a moment. But let's talk more specifically about the devil's assault. Now, here in the context, you remember Paul was referring to those who caused division and offenses that were contrary to the doctrine. And all throughout the scripture, when you look at the subject of false teaching, there's always the inference that Satan is working behind the scenes. We read about seducing spirits and doctrines of demons. So false teaching, twisted theological views, reasonings and philosophies that contradict what the scriptures say regarding God and Christ and so forth, these are ultimately, if you trace them back far enough, they are the philosophies and the ideas of the devil himself. So we have false teaching. We have persecution. The enemy is in many places of the world and has been for a long, long time stirring up flesh and blood against the people of God, resulting in various outbreaks of persecution. I saw a tweet that one of the sister churches in Africa was attacked by militant Muslims and 16 members were killed. And we hear about this stuff. This kind of stuff is going on. This persecution stirred up by the devil. And then, of course, there's temptation. And we all know something about temptation. But there are afflictions. And although you couldn't say that every time a person is sick, that would necessarily be connected back to the activity of Satan, there are certainly times when that is the case. We know that can happen. Paul, the apostle, stated concerning his own affliction that Satan was at the root of it. He talked about the thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan that was sent to buffet him. So we know that there are times when even afflictions can be the primary or the original source can be the devil. And then there's what we might call mental oppression. Even though there is a growing hostility in the culture toward the faith, we still haven't come to the place where there's outright persecution, really. And, you know, we can experience different kinds of conflict and difficulties and so forth, and the enemy can, you know, be working there, and, you know, the efforts through the false teaching to infiltrate, and, you know, as we talked about. But this area where this attack on the mind, this is so much what the enemy does, I think, in a situation like we have, in our cultural situation. He spends much of his time in attacking the mind and trying to trip us up, trying to deceive us in a variety of different ways. But I want to talk about some of the most common ways. And I have talked to so many people that have had these experiences and didn't really know what was going on, were definitely oppressed by these thought processes. And, you know, to be able to listen and then to respond back and say, hey, listen, that is the enemy. This can be tremendously liberating to, you know, find out what's really going on. But this mental oppression comes in the form, I think, most frequently of condemning thoughts. I was talking to a man a while back who's been here at the church for many years, a few decades, you know, consistent in his efforts to seek the Lord and his efforts to serve God. And he came to me and began to tell me about this constant mental torment that he lives with, that he's not really saved. And no matter what he does and, you know, how much he tries to, you know, just take the scripture and just take it to heart and believe what it says, there's just this tormenting thing that's happening with him. And it's the same thing over and over again, questioning his salvation, bringing up all different kinds of reasons why, you know, it might be true for others, but it's not really true for you. And, you know, in listening to him, my heart just goes out. I think, oh, Lord, this is such a tormenting thing. But this is the work of Satan. This is what he does. He doesn't want us to rest in our salvation. He doesn't want us to experience the joy of the Lord. He doesn't want us to have the peace of God. He wants us to live in torment. And so he comes along and he will suggest you're not really saved. Or Maybe you were saved, but you've sinned so badly, God could never really forgive you. He could never receive you back. Because after all, you knew better. And so God is finished with you. And these condemning thoughts and these thoughts oppress people. And, you know, even as they might consider, I need to get down to the church. I need to pray. Those thoughts will say, no, don't go down there. Oh, they know you're a big hypocrite down there. You don't want to show your face in that place. And it torments them and it beats them down. And the enemy wants to drive them to the point of despair. We have to understand that this is the devil's work. This is the kind of thing that he does. So condemning thoughts. But then there's what I would call consigning thoughts. The enemy wants to consign you to a certain lifestyle or a certain behavior. He wants to convince you of things that are not true, to consign you to bondage and to ruin your life. And he comes along and he throws these accusations at people. And he continues to hurl these things relentlessly over and over. His ultimate objective is for someone to just finally give in, just to embrace and just say, okay, that's it. That's who I am. That's who I will always be. There's no other alternative. There's no escape. This is the work of the devil. And, you know, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands of how many in here can identify with what I'm saying, but multitudes of people go through this. This is, you know, I mean, we read the Bible, you know, like I said, 20 out of the 27 books of the New Testament reference the devil. We read about demons in the days of Jesus and all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, here we are and we're going along and, you know, we don't see any demons and we're not having any encounters with things that we necessarily would automatically identify as satanic. But the reality is those creatures exist. And let me tell you, they're not sleeping. They're not resting. They're doing things. But here's the thing. We don't recognize that it's them that's at work. And so many things we relegate off to some, you know, it's some other thing. It's not that. And we tend to think in terms of psychology. And, oh, well, you know, that's a psychological disorder. And I recognize that there are, you know, I'm not saying that every manifestation of any sort of psychological issue is satanic. But I'll tell you what, I think in every one of those cases, the devil's got his finger in there somewhere. He messes with the mind. But on this idea of consigning thoughts, I want you to think with me about the younger generation in particular. But it's not limited to the younger generation. But today in our youth culture, there are so many that are battling with eating disorders, people that are battling with tendencies toward mutilation, people that are battling with homosexual attractions, people that are battling with suicidal thoughts. The missing component in most perspectives on these things or attempts to understand these things, the missing component is the activity of the devil. He's the one. He's the one who's coming with those accusing thoughts. He's the one who starts to speak into the minds of these young girls and tell them that they're overweight and they're never going to be accepted and they're never going to find love if they don't stay thin. And so they start to mess with their diets and they start to starve themselves. And in all of these cases, the story is very similar in that every one of them had these oppressive thoughts that are suggesting to them that if they don't do this, then these are going to be the consequences, and the consequences aren't pleasant. So now, of course, the psychologist would come along and say, well, this is because of this thing or that. But, you know, I find it very hard to believe that you could, against your will, because you hate it, you don't want these suggestions or thoughts or accusations, I find it very hard to believe that against your will, against everything that you desire, that you would be the one doing this to yourself. I find that hard to believe. I find it easier to believe that there would be demonic forces at work. Now, of course, generally speaking, when you look at the realm of psychology or psychiatry, they don't consider the spiritual realm as even a factor. It doesn't exist in their thinking. But we can't make that same mistake. And so what's true with the young girls with the eating disorders is also true with the young people who are into self-mutilation. It's the same thing is happening. Tormenting thoughts, self-hatred, these kinds of things that are, in a sense, driving these kids in these directions. And the same thing is true to a large degree with the homosexual types of things. I mean, the most common thing that you will hear from a gay person is they didn't choose to be this way. They don't want to be this way. That's very common. And what I believe that many have failed to recognize is that there has been a relentless effort on the part of the devil to beat them down mentally and to bring them to the point of just accepting this. This is who you are. This is what you are. There's no escaping it. Just embrace it. And it doesn't only happen in the mind, because the devil will follow up on that, and he will often then bring a person along who will suggest the same things. So there's no question in my mind, there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever, that this proliferation of homosexuality in our culture has at the root of it something very satanic. This is a spiritual thing. And because it's a spiritual thing, we've got to, if we're going to see any progress or, you know, hope or transformation of lives, we have to deal with it on that level. And suicide is exactly the same thing. When you talk to people that are suicidal, you hear the same thing over and over again. It's a relentless, tormenting, accusing thing that's going on in their heads that's driving them in the direction of suicide. That's what's happening. So again, I personally think the best explanation for these things is the work of Satan, because he is a murderer. He came to rob and to kill and to destroy. And this is what he's doing by seeking to consign people to these life-dominating sins and these sins that destroy people's lives. So we've got to recognize this. We've got to recognize this in order to be protected ourselves. And we've got to recognize it so we can help other people. So we can say to them, no, listen, this is what's going on. That isn't true. You see, all of these things are lies, right? Satan is the father of lies. As Jesus said, he can't speak the truth. It's not possible. There's no truth in him. So everything he does is a lie. And everything he suggests in some way, shape, or form is a lie meant to ultimately destroy. But we've got to be aware of it. We've got to realize it. So these condemning thoughts, these consigning thoughts, this is his work. And it's very prevalent in our experience today.
We'll return with more insightful lessons from the book of Romans in our next study as Pastor Brian continues with part 2 of Satan and the Christian. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Satan and the Christian. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number B0165. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. Pastor Brian would also love to connect with you online, and he can be found at facebook.com/PastorBrianBroderson. Also on Twitter at twitter.com/BrianBroderson. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
So turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.